Hello and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Aaron Flores. We're broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering day-to-day life, food, alcohol, bicycles and alternative transportation, arts and culture, communication, and the internet. And today, godlike bicycle journalist Jonathan Moss,
who sits in a cloud overlooking the city with a red phone in his hand, waiting to tell the entire bicycling populace what to do.
If a bicycle falls on the trail and nobody is there to see it, Jonathan Moss will.
That's right. Yeah, he is the omnipresent?
Omnipresent?
Omnipresent, yes. I can't believe I lost that word. That's, yeah. Well, it's Sunday afternoon. The sun is kind of shining into my eyes through the window into the basement, which is, this is the first time we've had sun on a Sunday afternoon in a couple weeks at least. It's really nice. I'm very happy. I got my bike back from Velocult finally.
Yay!
It's not their fault. It's my fault for waiting so long to have things done. But there was just this slightly off thing. My bicycle was, basically the chain was slipping.
Right.
And they adjusted both derailleurs, and now it runs like a charm. I have my bike back, and I can ride it to my heart's content.
Did not need new crank or new cassette?
Nope.
Awesome.
Nope, just small adjustments. Because I got a new cassette with the first round of work.
Right.
And in the second round of work, I got a new chain ring in front because all the teeth were pretty badly eaten up. I bought new gear, and now I can finally go out and ride, which is great. So I also had a really sad thing happen with Car2Go on Friday night.
Yeah.
Thursday night. I think it was Thursday. I was going to my second job, and I was going to do a little bit of work that night, and I was counting on Car2Go to get me from one place to another. Turns out, if you put your Car2Go membership card, which works on radio frequency, in your money clip and bend it around a bit, it doesn't work. Okay.
Like the chip or whatever.
Whatever's inside the card. Yeah, the wireless technology. No. It would not read. I couldn't get into. First, I had reserved a Car2Go, which I believe they reserve on a half-hour basis.
Right.
So I put in my reservation while I was having my coffee at Coffee Time on 21st Avenue in Northwest, which is a great spot, by the way. Have you been there, Aaron?
I've not.
Coffee Time. It's one of the older establishments in that neighborhood. It's been around for a long time, and one of the few places in that part of town where you can go inside and get a cup of coffee and just sit down for as long as you want to. They're kind of built on that model. So there's also chess players that hang out there a lot, I think.
Cool.
But beautiful spot. But yeah, I made my Car2Go reservation. And Car2Go, of course, is the unidirectional car rental system in which you pay for the time that you use and you can drop it off anywhere in their service area. And yeah, my card was shot. It didn't work. So I ended up hailing a cab, and I took a cab ride for the very first time in my life. And I'm like 30 years old.
Wow.
And this is the very first time I've ever had someone else drive me around for money.
So how does one hail a cab anyways? Because I've never actually had to do it myself either.
Yeah. I guess in the movies I've always seen like someone, standing on the sidewalk and waving their arm.
Right.
So that's what I did.
Which cabs are just, waiting for somebody to wave their arm at them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the first one that I saw had the light on top, which meant that I think it was ready to pick someone up.
Sure.
So my only experience with cabs heretofore had been working at the hotel industry a couple of years ago. I think 2005 to 2006, I had a job working night porter downtown, and I was carrying people's bags and parking cars and hailing taxis, and so I did some of that.
Okay.
I had never hailed a taxi myself in the wild, so I stuck out my arm, and actually it was from across the street. So it was, I believe, Green Cab. It was a Prius cab, which was kind of cool. It was very silent, swift. There was that. And the guy gave me a ride. It cost me $12 to go basically 20 blocks or so.
Ooh.
Yeah, ouch. Which, it was an emergency situation.
You're paying for the convenience.
Exactly. Yeah. But I will say I'm glad to have my bicycle back, because that's the cheapest form of transportation I know. And, I'm going to have to get my membership card from Car2Go replaced so I can use their fine service again someday. Hybrid buses. I rode a hybrid bus this last week.
No kidding.
Yeah.
What are those like?
I'll tell you what they're like. They don't rumble. Thing that I put up on Twitter was that basically, if you are used to riding diesel-powered transit buses, you sit down, the bus takes off, there's this distinct rumble that goes through the entire bus and into your butt. And as I was sitting there, the bus pulled away from the curb, no rumble. I had this ghost sensation in my butt that was expecting the diesel rumble to shake. And when the diesel rumble did not appear, my body said, wow, something is wrong here. And in fact, it's not wrong. It's just a different mode of locomotion.
Right.
Electric drive.
It's actually quite right.
Yeah, it's even better than it was before. Yeah. And Steve in Montana, one of our Indiegogo supporters, said, what was this like? I gave him some information on the Twitter. There's a Flickr pool, I think, of photos of these new TriMet hybrid buses. Dan Christensen, I believe, said that they only say hybrid because there wasn't room for ugly ass before hybrid, as in ugly ass hybrid.
Oh, Dan.
I actually think they look pretty great.
Yeah. He's so irascible.
That's right. He's also losing weight. I think his most recent blog post, he was kind of like the subway guy, like Jared, where like there's a picture of him like holding out his huge pants, you know, and him being much smaller than he used to be. So congratulations, Mr. Christensen.
Yeah.
Yeah. The last thing before I forget, it's getting to be about the time where it's sunny out again, so I need to start making good on my Indiegogo rewards.
Spandex ride.
It's time for me to put on some spandex. So, yeah, if anyone out there listening has, like, a kit that would fit me, I would be very interested in borrowing that. Because I'm not sure
really
I want to buy spandex.
Big kit.
Yeah, yeah. I am, I'm like a waist 36 and I'm 6'3". So if anybody out there matches those specifications and doesn't mind sharing essentially underwear, then, you know, that'd be great. Otherwise, I'll just go out and pick up a pair. But that's one of those things. And yeah, I still have two songs to write, one for Russ and Laura from pathlesspedal.com.
Oh, that one's got to be good.
Yeah, totally.
You can't just write.
I know. I can't half-ass my way through any of this. Definitely. And then Purple and Orange down in L.A.
So, oh, that one's got to be even better.
Yeah. Oh, and then Man on the Street interviews for Logan. That was the one. I helped him with transit planning, but I have not yet talked to strangers for him. So that's the next thing on the list, I guess. So anyways, now that the sun is coming out and it's okay to be outside, it's comfortable to be outside, I have no excuse. I got to get myself in gear. Well, hey, should we do some headlines?
Let's do some headlines. Right.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. It circles around the city lights.
Pedal just as fast as we can into the morning light. Pedal just as fast as we can into the daylight. Pedal just as fast as we can into the night light. Pedal just as fast as the leg of the ladder. Your pedal just as fast as we can into the morning light. Pedal just as fast as we can.
All right, dig. Qualcomm takes a try at improving the transit experience.
Yeah, Brandon Rhodes sent this to me, and we watched this just before we started taping.
Yeah, this is hilarious.
Yeah. It's a new commercial campaign to advertise the company, and they've been doing some, it's almost like flash mob type stuff.
Right.
Except it's corporately driven. But people waiting at bus stops, they replaced the ads on the bus stop with their own ad, which would trigger...
And like a telephone number or something, like if you have a mobile device, you know, whatever. Anyways, yeah.
Would trigger a surprise for someone waiting for the bus.
Right.
And so, there was a bus full of circus performers, a dog sled,
a sports car.
And a sports car picking you up at the bus stop.
Yeah. And I guess others. That
right.
You could go to their Facebook or whatever. And
I have not yet seen them myself.
Me neither.
But I was curious, Brandon's question when he sent this to me by email was, is this pro or anti-transit or neither? And I guess, I don't know, in some ways, like obviously they're using the bus stop to advertise for themselves. It's a very unique advertising campaign.
Yeah.
Kind of like the Old Spice thing almost.
Well,
I'm on a horse.
Yeah. Combined with, I mean, the whatever bus shelters or whatever you call them, those things are normally used for ads. You see a lot of, or you used to, I don't see them much anymore actually. But you used to see like a lot of movie posters. And
actually TriMet is famous for not advertising as much as other transit systems
right.
do. Like
yeah,
here
that's
in town,
why I don't see them.
There's almost no advertising on our buses, which I've always thought was interesting. Apparently it doesn't make that much money though, which is one of the reasons they don't do it.
Yeah. My question, if I'm to determine whether or not this is pro or anti-transit, you know, my question is, like, who the fuck is Qualcomm?
It's true, because it's one of those. And they have the logo, or like the stylized text for their company logo.
Right.
It looks like something that's kind of old and hasn't been around, or hasn't been updated in a while.
Right. Well, it's an old name. I've heard it before.
Yeah. I just decided
to go to their website we're talking. It's a wireless company.
Watch out. There's going to be a dog sled in the basement
now. Oh, no. Team of dogs.
So there's that. Well, how about the next one?
The next one says, pachow. The Oregonian is a passenger rail renaissance picking up steam in Oregon and Washington.
Picking up steam.
Oh, I get it. Yeah. Steam. Rail.
Know, yeah.
Passenger rail. Right. Wait. Oh, are we going back to steam power? How awesome.
Steampunk. It'd be great. Steampunk trains in the Northwest.
Quote, as much as anything, the findings run contrary to Amtrak's reputation as a big, bloated, federally subsidized program, says Robert Puentes, a Brookings senior fellow who co-authored the report. It's running most effective and efficient in places like Oregon and Washington, states that are putting skin in the game and reorienting attention to Amtrak as a viable transportation mode.
Yeah, and we talked about this maybe a year ago or almost a year ago about the fact that I believe from Oregon City to downtown Portland, it is cheaper and faster.
There was an article about that,
to ride Amtrak as a commuter rail option than it is to take TriMet.
Right.
Which is kind of funny.
Yeah. I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah.
Other than it's pretty interesting. I growing up in Michigan, kind of saw the trains as kind of antiquated. Mm-hmm. You could in the southern part of Michigan where I'm from, take a train from Jackson, which is kind of north of me, but part of the southeast part of the state, to Grand Rapids, which is part of the southwest, northwest part of the middle north. Anyways.
Is it like where your pointer finger would be on the mitten? No.
No. it's towards the outside of your palm. Anyways, neither here nor there. I guess it was just the point I'm trying to make is it was a lot easier to go east to west than north to south. However, we have a state. Michigan is pretty oriented north and south.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of people use the rail. We definitely saw it as kind of antiquated or something kind of poor people did because they didn't have cars.
Yeah. I'd be interested to see what would happen if Amtrak spun all of its different regions into their own companies. Mm-hmm. I know they're unified at the national level.
Right.
Probably for uniformity for one, offering the same level of service across the entire country. And I'm glad that's there because I like taking the train and have in many different places. But at the same time, I am curious, for example, if the Northwest areas of the Amtrak service were kind of managed and run locally, kind of with autonomy, it seems like those would probably do pretty well, according to the reports that were referenced in this news story. So we shall see. But I'm happy to hear that. I'm happy to hear that rail transportation is still doing it.
Yeah, and I wonder if it also has something to do with the fact that gasoline itself is getting more expensive.
Right.
So people are looking for alternate ways to get around.
Mm-hmm. Amtrak fares will keep going up, I'm sure. I remember, five or six years ago when I first started doing it on a regular basis to go home and visit family, it was like a $20 ticket from Portland to Tacoma. And now it's more like a $30 ticket. So, you feel it in the pocketbook.
But, a little bit.
Yeah. Would you work for Amtrak, you think?
Yeah, I think so. I'm actually really curious about it now.
Yeah, I think it'd be an interesting job. I think it would be a difficult job. And it depends on which runs you would take.
But. Right. Right. And well, we can get to that because we've got a little piece about that in the mailbag. But
yes, we do.
Yeah, we've talked a little bit about the length of hours or
just
how much time an employee puts into the train.
Totally. All right. Well, let's close out our news setting, our news segment, and then we will roll into the interview that I taped with Jonathan Moss.
Right on.
You're taking a lot of responsibility in owning and riding a bicycle. You are now an operator of a wheeled vehicle.
All right, I'm walking down Southwest 4th Avenue in bustling downtown Portland, Oregon. I have found the offices of Jonathan Moss from bikeportland.org.
and I'm on my way inside and up to meet him. Fancy stuff. There's an elevator and everything. Look forward to the day when I could get an office like this for the podcast. Maybe. I don't know if I'd want to have a downtown office. It's exciting. Okay. And here is his door. Hey.
Morning.
How you doing, man?
Good. How are you?
Good to see you.
You too. Yeah, have a seat.
I got you 10 barrel. I don't know if you drink during your work day or not.
I try not to.
In that case, you'll have to just save it for later.
I also only drink the gluten-free stuff.
Oh, you too?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Well, in that case...
You just got yourself a six-pack.
Had I known. Yeah, well, in that case, I'll be drinking 10 barrels some other time. And we'll be finding you some. No, that's fine. That's it's good to know. I should have asked, probably.
I guess now you might want to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been doing that for, I don't know, a while now.
Is it working out?
Yeah.
You
yeah,
feel
it
better?
It doesn't sit well with me.
Yeah.
And the more I don't have it, the worse it feels when I do.
Yeah. Have you had, I'm sure you've had all the gluten-free beer options then.
Pretty much.
Because there's Omission. Is that from Whitmer?
Yeah, that's my go-to.
Okay.
That's my go-to beer just because it's really good.
Yeah.
And they have a pale and a lager, which are both good. And I'm eagerly awaiting their IPA, which they're supposed to come out with, I think, in April, I hear.
Yeah.
But it's available in relatively cheap.
Okay.
Although it's about the same price as like an expensive regular
yeah.
six-pack. But for gluten-free, that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
The best I've had is probably the Harvester IPA.
Okay.
Personally, but it's...
And Harvest, is that the brewing company?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
they're
yeah.
a local brewer, but, you know, sort of typical small brewer where it's, you know, what, $7 for a 22?
Okay.
So a couple bucks more. And,
yeah.
You know, I'm an American, so I need my volume.
22 is the way to go, right?
These aren't like... I'm not into the French portion sizes, right? I need a lot of beer. No.
Yeah.
The gluten-free thing has turned beer drinking into kind of a luxury, which
yeah.
I guess is good, but it's a bummer because I was drinking a lot.
Sure. So, this is the Sprocket Podcast. I'm Brock Dittus. I am in the palatial offices of bikeportland.org with the czar, Jonathan Moss himself. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks, Brock.
So, the last time I saw you, and I think when we set up this appointment, you were at VeloCult waiting for a bike to be built. Is that right?
Not waiting for my own bike to be built. I think I was just hanging out there.
Oh, okay.
But I probably had my new bike there.
That, okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, which is one of the first times I had it out. So my new Joseph Ahern City Bike Portland official vehicle work bike.
There we go.
It's brand new, so I'm having fun moving into that thing.
It's an Ahern, you said, and that's built here in town?
Mm-hmm,
okay.
Yeah, right off of Williams in Vancouver. So
nice.
I've known Joseph. Joseph was one of the first builders I met when I moved into town. Going on 10 years ago now. So I've been thinking about a new city bike for a long time and came time and started talking to Joseph and several months later, here we are.
Yeah. What does it look like? What kind of a bike are we talking about here? Is this a commuter or is it something else?
Well, it's definitely a commuter. It's kind of Joseph's and my own interpretation built to doing the specific things that I need a bike to do in the normal course of my workday,
mm-hmm.
which is to, you know, be easily conversational with people, to notice everything that's going on around me, to easily take photos and stuff like that. So it's upright. So it's definitely got like the Dutch upright position. And it's got big old, you know, huge Schwalbe Marathon Supreme tires on it.
And Supreme, is that their best tire?
I don't know if
thickest,
it's their best, but it's really thick. Yeah, I forget how wide it is, but it's like a cruiser.
Okay.
It's like cruiser tires,
yeah.
really. So it's an upright bike. I got a huge front rack on it. That's my main work area.
And is that where your camera lives?
Yeah, that's where, excuse me, that's where everything lives, the camera, whatever stuff I'm carrying, my laptop, my extra lenses, and all that sort of stuff. And it's also got this really cool lock for the front rack, so you can lock it into place so the rack won't flop around at all.
Hmm.
And that's kind of like my workstation, combined with the big kickstand, the dual-prong kickstand.
Okay.
Makes it super stable.
Stable on both sides.
Absolutely, so I can hop off and rustle through my front bag and take care of my business. And that. So it's been fun. Yeah, I love it.
Nice. Well, congratulations.
Thanks.
Yeah. My bike is currently being worked on. I got here by bus today. And I don't know usually if I would get here by bus or not. I've been doing my yearly like tune-up, getting things clean, finally getting the bike back to where it should be. And it's taken a lot longer than I thought it would, just because my bike has more issues than I expected it to. So I think I need to be better about regular maintenance. But anyways, TriMet serves the area well and all. So basically, I was going to ask you about stuff in town, since you have your eye on everything. I was going to ask you what you're most excited about in town right now, what you are least excited or most agitated by in town, and then maybe your hopes for the near future as far as bicycling in town, culture, infrastructure, anything you like. So,
yeah, well, I think right now, see, what am I most excited about? I think the thing I'm most excited about is, first of all, the race season's just starting.
Okay.
That's pretty cool. And like always with OBRA, the racing organization, there's just more races this year, more people racing, more types of races and events. So it's super exciting. I get bummed out that I don't cover more racing on the site.
Yeah.
Just because that's a function of the fact that, number one, I don't have any help to go out and cover that stuff. And I personally am not really in a racing mode.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I haven't had time to really ride much at all or get out on the weekends. I'm usually with the kids and stuff at home on the weekends.
Right.
But it's really exciting what's happening. These gravel races that are going on are starting to happen more often.
Yeah, Ellie Tallheimer was telling us a little bit about that, because I believe it was her husband who was doing a crazy ride over in Ohio. I can't remember, somewhere in the Midwest.
Yeah, definitely. And the ones we're seeing in Oregon are kind of offspring of those.
Mm-hmm.
I think the one you're mentioning there is more of like an endurance oriented event. And what sort of happened is it just this weird thing where people started doing, some people call them gravel grinders,
but they're
basically just long, and they're actually not super competitive. It's a very laid back atmosphere. It's basically like an unsanctioned race. Some of them are sanctioned, but anyway, it's just going out exploring the countryside on a gravel road.
Yeah.
And now people are actually making bikes specifically for them and all this stuff. So of course, Oregon with all of its open spaces, I think is going to be a natural place for those kind of events. And there's definitely some coming up. It's a group called Velo Dirt that does some cool stuff. The Dalles Mountain 60 is coming right up. There's one down in Rickreal, which is, I think, like Willamette Valley, which is having a gravel classic. So that's exciting stuff. I'm sort of living vicariously through people I follow online and people I talk to that are actually doing those events. I'd hope to get out to them myself. But
I spend most of my years looking at maps and imagining being in these places. And
Right. Once you've, I've adventured and ridden a lot and raced a lot in my past, so it's never gone away. It's always like in the back of my head, and I just, I'm not able to act on it as much as I'd like. But in terms of more, in Portland infrastructure policy stuff, I mean, I think the most exciting thing right now, and I hope to learn more by the end of this week actually, is a plan being cooked up from the city of Portland to put in a grant application for several million dollars. I've heard up to $6 million, that would basically fund downtown bikeways.
Hmm.
So in other words, if you look, a lot of people think, well, why, do we even need downtown bikeways? What's the deal? But if you look at the bikeways downtown, they really haven't been touched for a long time, and there's really not any real bikeways to speak of.
Yeah. Is it fair to say that all the newest improvements to bike infrastructure have happened elsewhere? Like a lot on the east side, some in north?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, except for the little piece of cycle track or really a parking protected bicycle lane over by Portland State that only went in because Mayor Adams made a promise in his first 100 days to have a downtown cycle track.
Okay.
So that's kind of where that ended up.
It's certainly not the prettiest one in town either. It's pretty bare bones.
No, it's underdesigned. It's underdeveloped. It's not as effective as it could be. It doesn't connect to anything, which is kind of part of, the city knows that. The city knows that they're really hurting for downtown bike access. And in order to serve this constituency that they've built up in the neighborhoods, by spending a lot of money or spending some money on out in the neighborhoods and in other places outside of downtown, we've been putting about $1 million a year for the last 3-4 years into the neighborhood greenway program, right? So their whole thinking of doing that was to quote unquote build a constituency mm-hmm. of people that care enough about biking and that start to bike so that they can do the more politically difficult things like actually put protected bike lanes in commercial districts and downtown and stuff.
Sure.
So
yeah, what do you think of that as a strategy? Do you think that's like smart or wise, or do you think we already have the constituency?
A little bit of both. Okay. I mean, it's a good strategy, but I'm not naive enough to think that that's the only reason they did that. They clearly wanted to punt because they couldn't get the politics together to actually do the more difficult protected bike lane projects mm-hmm. on streets like, you know, 13th through Selwood or 28th through, you know, Northeast or Mississippi, Alberta, all those streets where we have no access for bicycles, even though you could arguably say that those streets would not be successful were it not for bicycle riding customers.
Right.
Yet when you're on your bike, you're being forced to sandwich between, you know, a lot of times buses, parked cars, you know, so it's not very pleasant. So, you know, doing projects on those streets are very difficult politically. Mm-hmm. The city, I don't think, though they definitely don't have the political capital or guts really to do it. So I think that's the big reason why they focused on the neighborhood greenways. Mm-hmm. But it does make sense that, you know, if you put a safe and welcoming bike friendly street in front of, you know, almost what 80% of Portland population is within a quarter or half mile or whatever. If you do that and people start getting out and riding, they're not just going to stop when they get close to their destination and start walking.
Right.
They're going to want to bike on those streets, including mm-hmm. downtown. So that's kind of where we are now. We are also. Thankfully, beyond a sort of dark period in Portland's biking sort of evolution, which was all the controversy in the Sam Adams administration. Mm-hmm. So I hope we're kind of getting over that. And so now the city, it's just that the timing is right and there's a grant opportunity available. And I think the city rightfully is looking at putting a package together of protected bike lanes, cycle track kind of stuff for downtown. They've been really quiet about where exactly the streets that they're going to focus on, what they'll be. They're basically right now in some heated talks with, you know, stakeholders and such mm-hmm. that they don't want to jinx anything.
Sure. So and stakeholders being like business owners
and
long-term downtown residents.
Basically it's business owners.
Sure.
They're the only ones that the city's really worried about. And that's a different conversation. I mean, I don't even know if I think they worry about them too much. Mm-hmm. I think the city worries about pushback too much to the point where they create a monster out of what might be just a little pipsqueak of a mouse.
Yeah.
And if you give something so much attention of being afraid of it, well, then it will fulfill that attention and it will become very scary.
The self-fulfilling prophecy.
Exactly. And I think that's where the city is with the Portland Business Alliance, which has always been, you know, the stick in the mud about really doing hard projects. You know, they'll use their letterhead to promote biking and say, we love biking and we support the bike plan and all this stuff. But, you know, when it comes to really looking at streets and reallocating the spaces of the street and restriping stuff, so new road diets, that kind of thing, they tend to not be as supportive. So that's exciting that there finally seems to be some movement for some real bikeways downtown. I think it'll be a game changer. It'll also force a conversation for the city to finally make some of their bridgeheads more accessible. Mm-hmm. I mean, the bridge access to downtown is sort of like the biggest myth and the worst thing about Portland a lot of people don't really appreciate is that all of our downtown bridges, they do get headlines because there's so many people that bike on them. But it's the bridges themselves are sort of like oases of good biking. And if you're traveling into downtown, anybody that actually bikes on them with a somewhat objective stance and say, let's say they don't work for the city or mm-hmm. for some other group that, wants it to sound like Portland is bike utopia, let's say, I think they would say, and as any reasonable person should say, that it's not that comfortable to come off the Hawthorne Bridge and come into downtown on a bike.
Right.
Or the Burnside Bridge. That's laughable.
Sure. The Hawthorne Bridge is an example of where there is a bike lane, but it's still kind of like bad conditions. The pavement down there on the downtown side is pretty choppy and gross. And the Burnside Bridge, I believe once you get there, you lose your bike lane once you get to the downtown area.
Absolutely. So Hawthorne and Burnside, which I don't know off the top of my head, Burnside's probably third in terms of most bikes. Hawthorne's number one. Broadway is a close second. I would say Burnside's third. But Hawthorne and Burnside basically drop you off into a mixed traffic environment.
Right.
There's no way you're getting to 25% of bike trips with that kind of facility. So
So the interested but concerned category of bicycle riders will end up stopping at the edge of downtown, locking their bikes right there and walking henceforth.
I actually wish they'd do that. Unfortunately, they leave their bikes in their garage and they drive, right? So that's what's happening. But so there's definitely some positive momentum. I think it's a good thing, although, former Mayor Adams deserves some credit for a lot of things, and did a ton of work to try to make biking and make transportation better in this town. Unfortunately, I think the controversies and things that were stirred up around him and a lot of the dislike people had around him ended up hurting biking more than helping.
He had a notable scandal, and his passion for bicycling was kind of irreparably tied to that. Like it or not, whether or not that's a fair thing, that's kind of how public perception and public opinion kind of ended up kind of mixing some of those things together.
Absolutely, okay. Exactly. I mean, he was the biking mayor, right?
Right.
I mean, and so when he went down, biking was a real easy thing to get at him with.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously in America, biking is, in general, an easy thing to make fun of. It's not, let's say, respected culturally like other modes of transportation are.
Right.
It became a scapegoat. It became a punching bag, became a political football to use biking. So that was unfortunate. But I think, obviously, now we're in a different era. There may be some different challenges with Mayor Hales, although I think after he's done campaigning, which he still seems to be doing, even though he's the election's over, when he sort of morphs into, calming down and settling in to the real job of leading America's most bike-friendly city, I think he will definitely come around and start doing some good stuff. I'm excited about this downtown bikeway plan. There's other things I'm excited about too, but I'll leave it at that, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. Is there anything happening close to where you live or where you work that you're particularly excited about, just as far as like improvements?
Yeah.
For example, one thing I'm thinking of is, I think it's just around the corner from your window here, there are the painted and buffered bike lanes, which is essentially a lane of traffic reduced in use to simply bicycle traffic, and it has the extra space that would usually be the full lane size, protecting you, at least in theory, from people driving in it. You said there was some new paint there, I think. That was it's like 2 months, 3 months ago, a post that you put up, but...
Yeah, besides the little cyclotrack project I mentioned over by Portland State, those bike lanes you just talked about, which are on Stark and Oak downtown, those green lanes, those are the only real other bright spot downtown. And I definitely think they're a bright spot. When they first came in for the first year or so, they were too, like the thing over by Portland State, they were under-designed, they didn't work quite well, they were kind of a first best try by the city, but they were definitely not enough. People would drive in them pretty often. They didn't have much green paint at all, only at the intersections. And it just so happens that I got my office right here where I can see them. And when I first moved in, I couldn't stand seeing everybody drive in them constantly. So I got my camera and started taking pictures of them.
It was well documented.
Yes, it was very well documented. So that fortunately got the city out there to finally take a look, and they had to agree that they were inadequate. So eventually they ended up painting the entirety of the lane green, so it's a bright green. And not only that, but they essentially added width to it.
Mm-hmm.
So now it may be unprecedented, I don't know, but if you look at the cross-section of the street now, the space that's only for use by bicycles, which is the green space, is equal, if not, it's definitely equal to the standard lane next to it in terms of width. And because it's green, it actually looks more prominent, it looks, more solid than the lane next to it, which is a standard vehicle lane. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So that really changes the balance of power, if you will, on the vehicles on the street. And lo and behold, from my observations and from the city's observations, people are driving in it far less.
Mm-hmm.
So just with paint and a couple $1,000, there's no delineators, there's no bollards, there's no protection physically. Just with paint, because it's so wide and it's so consistent and solid paint, they're able to basically create this protected bike space, which I think is a great lesson for the city, for everybody, for the haters, for everybody, of like, look what we can do for barely any money.
Sure.
Right? And we're just using the existing street and making more use of the capacity.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting more out of those streets.
Yeah.
So that's very, very cool. I mean, I think we could, so the question is, what other streets could we do this on?
Right.
Right. Obviously, there's a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, So that's definitely a good thing. And in terms of, you asked about sort of other things maybe closer to home or whatever that might be improving. The big thing is how the city continues to deploy their neighborhood greenways. You know, I happen to get lucky and live on a street that's become now one of the big neighborhood greenway streets.
And that was one of your most recent posts, I think. Mm-hmm. I just remember reading that the other day.
North Michigan Avenue. Mm-hmm. And it just so happens that it's only being identified and being put built out as a neighborhood greenway because it's being able to be attached to some other project that they got federal money for, and it connects to this biking and walking bridge over there. So it's really exciting because there's now 20-mile-per-hour signs. They've lowered the speed limit. One of those signs is right in front of my house, which is fun. There's a Sharo right in front of my house. So that stuff's real. The biggest thing recently are the crossings. Mm-hmm. They've added hard curbed medians in the middle of some of the bigger streets that cross Michigan.
Right.
With new signage that says, you know, basically expect people to be biking and walking, and reflectors and stuff. So those make a big difference. I mean, you could always quibble about the design of the medians and the crossings, and of course you could do more diversion, you could do more things, but the bottom line is, I mean, I ride it every day, and just because the lanes have been narrowed down a little bit because of these medians, because mm-hmm. of the new signage, when I roll up on a bike, people definitely stop more.
And
that's a big deal.
You were saying, I think another article that you just put up was a reinterpretation of the pedestrian crosswalk law of when right-of-way is activated and whether or not that applies to people on bicycles, which has been a thing that I've been curious about for years.
Yeah.
On a group ride downtown a couple of years ago, I remember some friends and I were down here. I think we got some food or something. And then there happened to be some Portland police standing on the corner and just kind of, you know, shooting the shit, doing whatever they were, you know, talking about something. And I just said, hey, I'm curious. Give me what does it mean? What does crosswalk law mean? Like, you know, if I'm on a bike, can I, you know? And I believe the answer that they gave was the same one that that you arrived with the post that you came up just recently. So that's a fairly new thought. I think people are probably still confused about it. But
yeah,
do you care to elaborate?
Yeah, that's the problem with all these laws that pertain to something besides motor vehicles, is that because they're written for motor vehicles initially, what happens is that advocates for other things like biking and walking are forced to kind of whittle away at the edges to make them better for biking and walking, mm-hmm. instead of a wholesale new law or a complete revision in a holistic way. So what we end up with are vague, confusing laws that can be interpreted any number of ways. So who suffers, right? The people that aren't in cars. So
Unless you don't care about the law, and there is that element as well. But
right. Well, in the case of the crosswalk law,
provided you want to do the right thing.
Right, exactly. I mean, the crosswalk law is just a classic example of how biking is this hybrid thing between, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes it's treated like someone walking, sometimes it's treated like a car, sometimes it has its own laws as a bicycle. And for the end user, it's super confusing to the point of ridiculous and ineffective. So with crosswalk laws, let's see. You know, in order to legally have people to have cross traffic have to stop for you on a bicycle, you only get that right if you're on a sidewalk. Mm-hmm. So if you're on a sidewalk, you can be on your bike and dip your front wheel into the crosswalk from the sidewalk, and then if people don't stop for you, they're technically breaking the law, right?
Technically,
right. But of course, there are also other pieces of that say you have, if you do that and you think they're required to stop, they have to actually have time to stop. Mm-hmm. So you can't just go dipping your wheel in and start telling people they should stop, because if they don't actually have time to stop, and that's, again, that's a gray area, mm-hmm. Then they may not be liable for hitting you or whatever. So there's lots of gray areas. So, but if you're on a bike and you just come up to an intersection from the lane of travel, you're treated like a car.
Right.
Absolutely the same as a car.
Right.
Right. So if you want to be sneaky and you come up to a crossing that's busy or annoying, or there's no light for you and you're on your bike, just roll up to the sidewalk and dip your wheel in, mm-hmm. and then kind of, you know, press the issue a little bit that way.
Right.
And then at least if you get smacked, you'll get your medical bills taken care of.
Then you have legal recourse. Yeah. Yeah.
If that's, you know, that's not advisable either.
Sure.
But, you know, so
don't go chasing waterfalls.
Yeah, it's all over them. It's all over the map, though. And if people for folks that are listening, it's you know, the crosswalk doesn't have to be marked.
Right.
So every
right.
corner is a crosswalk in Oregon. So it doesn't matter if there's paint or not. The crosswalk laws still apply. But again, if you're on a bike and you go to use a crosswalk, the law demands that you're, I think, as slow as the slowest person walking.
right,
or something crazy like that.
So and that's, practice your track stands.
Yeah, that's another law that's just ridiculous for a bicycle. I mean, if you have a system of laws that defines the bicycle, you know, in the same way it defines a motor vehicle, mm-hmm. yet you also have laws within that thing that say a bicycle has to go the same speed as someone walking. I mean, it's just silly.
Sure.
It doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's right? nearly impossible if you're doing your due diligence. It's it's very hard to you almost immediately double your speed from walking to bicycling by nature of the mode. So
maybe
velocipede, if we could reintroduce that as a, you know, a term that we use for legal reasons, that would help tie it to pedestrian issues more.
I'd just like to see the whole vehicle law book just rewritten.
Sure.
Just go in with a big fat pen and start crossing stuff out and get
a black marker.
Yeah. I mean, the legislature could, they could appoint a legislative committee to write the Oregon vehicle, you know, law, whatever, the Oregon vehicle code, you know, drop motor from Department of Motor Vehicles, drop motor from the law book at all. Let's just talk about vehicles and you know, open ourselves up to sort of a broader vision of laws instead of just, you know, this car-centric version that we're stuck with now.
It would be nice. It would be a haven if we could just, you know, just rope off the metro area. You know, just say we're going to do something completely different here.
Yeah, right. Our own codes and laws and things like that. Maybe so, maybe so. You know, but you know, none of this would even be worth talking about if we had a system of laws and judges and courts and cops and society and media, a system that respected people on bikes, that, you know, that wasn't sort of culturally biased against people that are riding bikes. Because the only reason this stuff comes into play in a negative way if you're riding your bike is when something does happen, that system is sort of against you.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not given the same amount of respect as if you were in a car.
Right.
Right? So, and then unfortunately, when a judge looks at these wordings of these laws, these gray areas become very important. And unless you've got a really good lawyer on your side, right, or you can remember everything that happened clearly, even though you got knocked unconscious, right, you're going to have trouble proving your case. And, you know, there's a good chance the judge may not be someone who rides in an urban environment and appreciates the issues. It's a good chance the cop, you know, maybe probably doesn't live in Portland, doesn't appreciate urban bicycling issues, right? So you just go down the line and you kind of get the deck stacked against you. That's what's unfortunate.
I was trying to remember. I believe it was OPB. I was listening to Think Out Loud and they were talking about some police issue and they were describing the demographics of Portland police officers and the number of officers who work for Portland police who live in town versus those who don't. And it was a surprising number of, I want to say, I don't remember the statistics, but I want to say that it was more officers lived outside of town than in.
Yeah.
And I can understand some of that due to the nature of the work. Mm-hmm. If you're known as a police officer, then, you know, that that label and that responsibility follows you around everywhere. So if you really truly want to be off the clock, then maybe it makes sense to live somewhere else. But at the same time, I can understand, like, that could drive a lack of empathy from the law enforcement side when it comes to bicycles and things.
Yeah, I'd say that's...
And people.
I'd say that's an understatement, that it's hard to relate and to have empathy and to understand these issues of urban bicycling and the people that are doing it if you live in a place where it never happens.
Right.
That's just a... You know, if that's the case, and I agree, it is a problem, and it is the case that a lot of the police don't live here... you know, we ought to have a local city ordinance or at least a strong policy within the police bureau that mandates a certain amount of bike hours from officers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just think that's a basic thing. Again, that gets back to what I was saying before about a systemic cultural bias against it. I mean, if you have people entrusted to enforce laws and use their discretion to do so, and there are vehicles they're doing that to that they themselves have absolutely no experience with and may have a predisposition to not appreciate for various reasons, cultural or otherwise, or the fact that they don't know about them.
Sure.
That's a problem, right? So it would be pretty simple to say to the police bureau, you know, from the commander or some policy directive that says once a month or once a quarter, we're going to have an officer bike clinic or meeting or ride or something.
Right.
That's going to help sensitize them to some of these issues. I mean, they have training on any number of issues.
Sure.
You know. And there are definitely some, actually in Portland, probably more than other cities, There are lots of good cops that do know what it's like to bike.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them that have trained to be on the bike patrol, although unfortunately the budget and the priority from the Bureau is not to really promote their bike patrol very much.
Seems underutilized, I would say.
Yeah, unless they want to quash major civil unrest like Occupy, and then we see hundreds of bike cops all of a sudden,
right.
which is a little concerning because those are probably not cops that are really familiar with
exactly. The
bike beat,
yeah.
If you will. They just kind of grabbed a bike because they know it's a good tool
for
dealing with big crowds. So
or anyway. The beat of the disco trike.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no understanding, yeah.
Right.
You were down in Salem recently, and we actually delayed this conversation because you... You lost your voice. You were doing a lot of speaking, and it was kind of worn out and hoarse. So I'm glad you're feeling better. Congratulations on the recovery.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
You were down there talking about the Columbia River crossing, which is impending. It's kind of looming over us and has been for several years, which is a bridge replacement project called by some, so-called. It's a huge, complicated issue, but you were down kind of, I believe, lobbying against, is that correct?
No. I mean, I was down there, but I wasn't taking an active role in lobbying against it.
Yeah.
I was
observing and reporting.
And reporting and stuff. But yeah, that's why I was down there, because there were a lot of people down there lobbying against it, and it did have two hearings recently this month for a committee that ended up voting for it and then passing it on to the Oregon House, which they voted for it earlier this week.
So we're essentially expecting a new bridge now at this point.
I'm not. there's still, you know, there's still a long way to go before any ground gets broken on this thing, which is good if you're against the current project,
mm-hmm.
and annoying and frustrating if you don't like your tax dollars being paid to plan something and to continue planning it for years. You know, we spent $170 million
mm-hmm.
already paying very high-paid consultants and other folks that are just loving seeing this thing get dragged out because they're billing hundreds of dollars an hour.
I would imagine.
To let it keep going. So, So it's still got to get voted yes in the Senate, and the governor has to sign it into law. But even if this bill passes, it doesn't authorize the project to be completed by any stretch.
Mm-hmm.
It basically says if some conditions are met, we could borrow the money to pay for some of Oregon's share of the project, you know, and those conditions aren't likely to be met, I don't think, and there's some pretty big conditions, or you could look at the bill and say that it was written and those conditions are toothless and soft, and if they want to ram it through and get started, they'll be able to do it. I can see a little bit of both. The type of sort of backdoor, behind the scenes, powerful mafia kind of stuff that's going on to push this project.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to think in some ways if they've gotten it this far, there's really nothing that will stop them.
Sure.
Short of massive change in heart from lawmakers
mm-hmm.
that say hell no.
Okay.
And that's only going to happen if they feel uncertain about it enough and they hear from enough people in the public that it's a bad idea and they don't want their name attached to it, which is incidentally the place the project had been for years leading up to just last month,
okay,
when people around the project finally were like, okay, this is our chance, you know, because we have a majority. There's one party had a majority, and the governor, that's the governor's party, that's the Democrats. And so anyway, they ended up pushing it through in a matter of weeks in the legislative session this time around. Unless there's a big change of heart from a lot of lawmakers, it's probably, this thing will probably pass the Oregon legislature, but it's by no means a done deal yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there we go. Is there anything else as far as things that you might be unhappy with in town? Anything that you'd like to highlight?
No, I don't want to talk about any more
That's
stuff
right.
that I'm
no.
unhappy with.
That's good. That's good.
I tend to, you know, I could... let's talk about more positive things.
Totally, yeah. Well, here's something. As far as... Before we maybe go to hopes for the future and looking forward... you got to be one of the first renters of the Dutch Tub from Clever Cycles. We had Martina on our show a couple weeks ago, and I think she had said that they were just in the process of finally being able to roll these things out. A Dutch Tub is a rentable hot tub, wood-fired, towed by bicycle, and I believe at this point they send a person along with it to set it up and make sure you know how to use it. So you had one of these in your yard, basically.
Yeah, it was fantastic. One of the owners of Clever rolled up on his bike, unhitched it from this custom trailer they made, or they had someone make to hold this tub, and we rolled it into the backyard, set it up, lit the fire next to it, heated the water up, and had a hot tub in the backyard. It was pretty fantastic. My daughters loved it. My little boy loved it. And it was really nice. And to think that you can make all that happen without any electrical power or any kind of mechanized thing, we'll accept the bicycle chain, of course, was pretty cool. It's super fun. I hope the program works out. It's, as you can imagine, pretty complicated to rent out a hot tub that's pulled by a bicycle.
Yeah, that's why it's taken them this long to get it onto the street, because they started talking about this 2 years ago, maybe, and it's finally just happening. So,
right. Well, the interesting thing will be is if they end up getting orders for these tubs. I think they're like $7,000 a piece or so, it'd be fun to see if they start importing these things and selling them. They're really great. I mean, they're super fun. They're well made, and they're from the Netherlands, so you get that nice Dutch design and thoughtful design into it. So yeah, that was really fun.
Yeah. Well, since I was just thinking, like, if you could roll like the rentable hot tub and Portland police training into a Pedalpalooza ride and just do it all in one big fantastic thing, that'd be a great year.
So. Yeah, I mean, we could serve donuts, like, you know, tub side. That would be put the cap on the whole thing. Somehow,
oh, geez. You know, good times. So the future, what are you looking forward to?
Well, in the future, I'm looking forward to, it's kind of like, I look at it like, just like a rising tide. Like, bicycling is at its root really like a social phenomenon. Mm-hmm. You really can't stop it once it sort of takes root, and it's certainly taken root here. So, regardless of my frustrations with the politics or with anything else, with these non-traversies that tend to come up in the media, wherever else, I sort of can find solace in the fact that from a social phenomenon standpoint, it's super healthy here in Portland. Mm-hmm. The word is spreading. Yeah. You know, it's so fun, and it so takes hold of people that do it, whether they do it to race or just to get to work or just to get to the store. It makes people feel good, so they tell friends about it, and more people bike. So just with the passage of time, you know, the streets will be taken over by people on bikes. That's not a function of good advocacy or good politics. That just happens by nature of time passing, I think. Yeah. That's how it's
social habit kudzu.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's the thing. The ecosystem is healthy enough wherein it produces, healthy bikes, healthy people on bikes to inside the ecosystem, and it just keeps flourishing. I'm really excited about that. I mean, it's definitely happening. One of the big things for the future that just continues to evolve that I love keeping track of is a lot of the business aspect of it, not just from businesses understanding that bikes are awesome and that they help the bottom line and it's a good deal for the city, but more so like for the bike related businesses and the bike industry that we have in town. Just the other week I reported on a local duo that's launched a new bike company out from North Portland. They have really big plans to be a real big bike company with, hiring welders and making bicycles here in Portland. And there are several concerns like that in town. One of them is already set up more like a factory. So, when you combine that with the fact that, the Obama administration is really talking a lot about insourcing, and the dynamics in China have changed so much in terms of making cheap stuff, not quite as cheap as it used to be. Mm-hmm. And if you combine that with how powerful biking is as a brand and an attraction here in Portland, we have a huge brain trust of people that have moved here that love biking and are really talented in some aspect of it. So, like the whole Silicon Valley for bikes is definitely a happening thing. And it seems like every month there's a new byproduct of that pops up, something. So that's always really exciting too.
Minneapolis can suck it. Maybe not. I still need to talk to somebody from Minneapolis and make sure we can clear the air between the two cities. But yeah. That is exciting. It's cool to see industry and business actually happening.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I'm excited for coming up on my 10th anniversary of doing the site.
Yeah.
That's a real big milestone for me.
When is that going to be?
It's going to be, technically April of 2015.
Okay.
So this April will be the eighth anniversary of starting the blog on the Oregonians website. Mm-hmm. And then a few months later, I started it on my own. So probably in June of 2015.
There we go.
Will be the big 10-year thing. But that's exciting, just because, you know, it's sort of a it's just a milestone in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
To have been doing this that long, and you know, there's a lot of different things around that. I mean, some of it's not exciting. Some of it's kind of like, you know, holy crap, I've been doing this for that long, and it's kind of like there's it's not all unicorns and rainbows for sure. But I figure if I can last that long, it's going to be worth a pretty good party. Mm-hmm. It's going to be worth celebrating.
Yeah.
I haven't lasted that long yet, so you never know.
Yeah.
But so I still have to make that.
But in 2 years, you're going to be ordering a lot of gluten-free beer.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Or calling up my friends at Widmer and getting some omission.
Perfect.
Been lucky enough to do.
Well, cool. How long have you been in the office here?
I think going on over a year, a year and a half or so. Yeah.
Does it feel good to have your own space?
Oh, yeah. I love it. I love being downtown. You know, it's great having an office where I can shut the door and have some private, quiet space. I have real attention deficit problems.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't be in. I was in one of these shared spaces before with people walking by. And
right.
Didn't feel like I could speak without other people hearing me. And so I would get distracted, and it didn't work out that well.
Yeah.
So this is real nice to just be able to focus, you know, and not be distracted. And
Water cooler.
Not that I have, you know, real secret conversations on the phone very often. I don't do that kind of reporting very often. But when I do, it's
when you pick up the red phone.
Yeah, exactly.
That calls all the bicyclists in Portland to tell them what to do.
I don't want anybody hearing my commands or the next marching orders.
Exactly. So it's bikeportland.org. And anything else you want to share with the world at large?
I don't know. Just keep riding. I mean, we're in the middle of winter. I've seen about half the bike traffic I'm used to out there, so it's a little bit of a bummer, but keep riding.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, Jonathan Moss from BikePortland.org, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Brock. It's an awesome show.
And we're back with the mailbag before we close out the show.
Right on. The mail. Shall I start it?
Yeah, go for it.
Oh, okay. So, first off, Johnny K shares a generous donation and says, "We are rock stars." Oh, God. that's debatable. But, yes, we are grateful nonetheless.
Thank you, Johnny K.
Yeah, thank you very much. I always find it a humbling experience whenever somebody, like, decides to give the show money, not give us money.
Right. So, well, I suppose what you're doing, really, when you give to money to this show, is you're giving beer to the guests if they so desire it, and you're also
hosting fees.
Yeah, you're paying for the website to be run. Yeah, and I don't know that we have ever made more than we spend.
No.
Yeah, it's not. So don't worry. We're not like buying cars or whatever with or even fancy bikes with the money that you send us. We are, in fact, just putting that towards the housekeeping bills. So.
Yeah.
Much appreciated, though. Thank you.
Yeah, very appreciated. Like when I say I find it kind of humbling, it's just. You know, this started off as, for you anyways, as like just something you really like.
Mm-hmm.
You like doing kind of the radio thing, and you like bikes and simple living. And thought like, I'll let other people into this part of my life.
Yeah. Bullshitting into a microphone.
And then other people came along like me and were like, yeah, this is fun. And it's always, I guess it's humbling in that, like, I never thought anybody would be like, it's fun to listen to you guys do this.
Right. Yeah. That's probably the most astounding part to me. Yeah. But, you know, good times.
Yeah. Thanks, Johnny. Anyways, from Tim, just got back from a visit to the Ivy City Amtrak maintenance area in DC for a video shoot. Think you would have been in heaven with all the Amtrak eye candy.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty fascinating to see the incredible number of people and degree of infrastructure put into maintenance and safety for the trains. I'm doing a video for the folks that support the employees, so we had a full access on one of their long-haul trains as the set for the shoot. Cool experience, including watching Homeland Security doing Storm the Train for Bad Guys drills with bright blue plastic guns in hand. More here, including me in an Amtrak hard hat.
That's right.
Sends us a link.
Yeah, this is here's his picture here.
Yeah.
So listener Tim, that's actually, I believe Tim is the one who chose the Indiegogo reward of a bike ride with the hosts.
Okay.
So
next time he's out, or when he gets out here.
Whenever he comes to Oregon, yeah. I don't know when that'll be, but that'll be a latent reward just sitting and waiting to be claimed. But yeah, that was seeing the track equipment pushing and pulling train engines, which is pretty cool. And he also, clever use of space in the roomettes. And
oh, yeah.
Also, he says that the men and the women there were really pleasant, cool people. So that's cool. Yeah. Anyways.
So now I definitely can't work for Amtrak.
Oh, no, I think you can. I think that bolsters your possibility of employment. Only thing is that it would be a strange schedule. I don't know that you'd be able to co-host a podcast and work for Amtrak at the same time.
Yeah. Got to be back on Sundays at 2 o'clock.
Yeah, unless we spun you off into your own podcast. It'd be
The Jeffersons? Yeah,
sure.
They were a spinoff of All in the Family.
Yeah, it'd be the Jeffersons of the Sprocket Podcast.
There you go.
There we go. Well, hey, we should probably wrap this thing up.
Wrap it.
Anything else? Anything else we should know before we go?
Got a new housemate. Got a
That's
new
right.
housemate.
That's right. It's very young.
Congratulations to Lincoln for being born.
Yeah, totally.
in the house that I live in.
And you're actually sleeping over here until the hubbub subsides, right?
Yeah, I'm camping over here until like family and craziness all subsides. I was just over there early afternoon, I guess.
Yeah.
And they're like, you can come back here and you can sleep in your own room if you want.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'll wait till like everybody's settled.
Until they get the birthing tub out of the house and all that.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, congratulations to Allison, who is on one of our shows. And
episode 113, I think.
To Rod, her husband, for a successful home birth.
Totally.
In the house that I live in.
Yeah. That's kind of cool. Yeah. All right.
It's kind of neat, yeah.
Here is the end, the very end of everything.
Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send feedback about the program and suggestions for topics and or guests and or drinks. Write us via email. The address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Or call and leave us a message at 503-847-9774. Connect with us on Twitter at sprocketpodcast. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing the theme music. Find him on the internet at ryanjlane.bandcamp.com. Thanks to Hurt Bird for our headline sounder. Find them at hurtbirdmusic.com.
All right. Well, everybody, keep your rubber side down and enjoy the new weather out there.
Right
on.
Nice. Thanks for listening.
Cheers. Bye. That's the wrong one. Never mind. Hang on. Closing.
Nope.
There it comes. Oh, that's the show closing. Shit.
Good night, folks. This will be fixed in editing.
I guess. Man, this will be fixed in editing.
Is it even worth doing this? Like, I'm using the bathroom in the building that the office is in. And that's better. The scent of this soap is the same scent as the soap on the Amtrak, which I love. Maybe the only smell I love better than that is the Dial soap that my grandpa used to use. All right.
Okay, now, closing.